We're joined now by LSU law professor Chris Tyson. Let's start with the consternation right now over the Brave program. You have said that this is being taken advantage of by opponents of the mayor. What's going on in your judgment?
Well, good morning, Jim. Good to be with you again. This has received a ton of coverage. It's a moving target right now. What we do know, though, is that there has been confusion over what the Brave program actually does and what are the kind of components of that program, specifically having people in the community working with youth, working on activities and enrichment programs and community programs, having that as a part of crime prevention is puzzling to some. And it shouldn't be, right? Because we can have more approaches to crime prevention than simply locking people up. And the Brave program has always taken that into account. The revelation that we have community programs as a part of this and that that involves community activists and others who are doing that work and being compensated has been controversial. It shouldn't be. We should want to have a holistic approach to developing communities and preventing crime.
This started when it was reported that Arthur Silky Slim Reed was getting some of the Brave expenditures to combat crime in 70802 primarily. He is an activist who has a history of some good things and some not so good things, and until this recent outburst at the council meeting was well thought of in the community by most people. Has he become a magnet for everybody else who was associated with the Brave program?
Well, I hope not. First of all, I don't think anyone else wants to condone Silky's comments at the Metro Council meeting. They were disturbing, I think, and regrettable, I hope, for him, and should not color the Brave program more broadly. It is important to point out, though, that Silky has been working with law enforcement for almost two decades, doing anti-violence and gang work. Again, not to minimize his comments here, but to say that this idea that we have a holistic approach to crime prevention is something that this police department, under more than one chief, and certainly beyond the Broom administration, has pursued. And so we can't pretend to be surprised by that. I think that this is much bigger than any one individual, and therefore I hope we get our facts straight on that as we discuss this in the community.
Not much said about the $200,000 that was allocated for the Healing Place Church, though. Now, that's a much bigger allocation than these others. Why has there been very little attention of that to that?
You know, this is difficult. I think on some level, people are understandably not aware, and people have very antiquated conceptions of what is appropriate law enforcement. And to them, that's cracking skulls and locking people up. We in Louisiana, the most incarcerated nation, know the folly of that approach and hopefully are going to dig ourselves from out of that. We can't ignore the racial undertones here. Part of this is monies that have gone, and this is what initially former councilman and police union liaison John Delgado raised in a series of posts on Facebook last weekend, that there are people who have been vocal protesting in the Alton Sterling aftermath, who also do community work and have received monies under this program, something that former councilman Delgado alleged was disqualifying. And that goes to the heart of what are appropriate interventions in our most troubled communities, which are our Black communities, who is entitled to receive the public largesse to address that, and what limits do we place on them, particularly with their activities. And so we can't square that we're going to have community workers who happen to be Black working in the communities they know best, delivering services beyond simply locking people up. And also, you know, pretend to be surprised when those same people express through their right to free speech their dissatisfaction and displeasure with government law enforcement or what have you. So we have to be honest about that.
Former Councilman Delgado has been in a spat with a local poet, Donnie Rose, on Facebook primarily. And Delgado, in one of his most recent posts, says, why should He, Rose, get paid $7,600 for teaching a 4-week poetry course to young gangbangers. Now, former councilman has since said he should not have used the word gangbangers, but obviously the passions are high.
And the imagery and what we are tapping into is very distinct and has a particular rhetorical lineage that we cannot deny. When you deploy terms like gangbangers, thugs, we know exactly what you're talking about. And to create, to take a broad brush across black youth, the idea being that stimulating their artistic capabilities as opposed to locking them up is somehow an invalid approach to community building and law enforcement simply is transparent as day. And we have to call that out. To take Donnie Rose particularly to task, and in full disclosure, Donnie's a friend and someone whose work I'm familiar with. He has just won an international poetry competition with teens from Baton Rouge, competing against 60 teens from all over the world. He's brought that honor to Baton Rouge, and we see that work derided using these kind of crude racial stereotypes. It is just so unfortunate. And again, as we in this city continue, you know, try to make attempts to present ourselves as something, as a place that's progressive and aspirational, we get drugged back in the mire of this really antiquated and poisonous thinking. And so I hope John will recant those statements. I hope everyone in this community will support the arts efforts that are being done by people like Donnie Rose and many, many others that are yielding results, positive results for our children as we deal with educational deficits, resource deficits in our most troubled neighborhoods in this city.
The program, the BRAVE program, came into effect in 2013, and at that point the decision was made to allocate over $200,000 to the Healing Place Church, and a listener asked, what has the Healing Place Church been doing with that money? You know?
I do not know. And I make no pretense at having audited the BRAVE program or knowing exactly where those funds are going. We do not see yet an outrage from former Councilman Delgado or any others over that use of community funding. So again, that raises questions about what is the true source of our outrage here.
All right, on another topic, the Trump administration is preparing to direct resources of the Justice Department Civil Rights Division toward investigating and suing universities over affirmative action admissions policies deemed to discriminate against white applicants. What do you think of this?
Well, I think when your administration and your agenda is falling apart so spectacularly as the Trump administration's is, you fall back on a base strategy. And a base strategy in Republican politics, conservative politics, has long been affirmative action. And that specifically is to message to their base that there are things that black people or brown people or people of color or whoever, non-white, there are benefits they are getting that they don't deserve. And those benefits are coming out of your pockets. And therefore, regardless of the fact that you were taking away your health care, we're driving down your wages, we're destroying the planet, don't pay attention to that. These people of color are taking things that are rightfully yours, and let's stop them. And that politics is not new. Trump, nor Sessions, or anyone can claim a license on that. It has been operating at least since the post-civil rights era. It has been a wedge issue in American politics. Some people would argue it has resulted in the ascendancy of Donald Trump and some of the racialized politics we see at the core of his movement. But I think this is expected. I think the only surprise is that it didn't come earlier.
The New York Times broke the story, and in its front page account yesterday, it says the supporters and critics of the project say it's clearly targeting admissions programs that can give members of generally disadvantaged groups like black and Latino students an edge over other applicants with comparable or higher test scores. Would we have diverse student bodies at universities, public universities primarily, if we didn't have some kind of affirmative action programs in place?
So, Jim, the other interesting dynamic here is that the Supreme Court has just weighed in on this. The Supreme Court will likely have other opportunities as cases are moving through the lower courts that address alleged discrimination by Asian American students against what they would argue their less qualified white or other counterparts. So there is a multiracial aspect to this that is bubbling in the courts. But in the Fisher v. Texas decision that just came down last year, the court decided, affirmed, that race can be one of many factors that are used in college admissions. Many universities across the nation pursue just that approach. It is not simply that race is the only factor. Race is one of many factors in an effort to create diverse campuses because we believe that that reflects America. We believe that that reflects something essential about a democratic society and because we believe that that contributes to learning and better outcomes.
Are we going to have more racial tension as a result of this?
I think we have racial tension already.
I know we do.
I think that the Trump administration here is playing to their base. 44%, according to one survey, think that whites are losing out because of preferences for blacks and Hispanics. White college admissions and enrollment is up. And continues to go up. So there's a disconnect there. White women historically have been the largest beneficiaries of affirmative action programs. There's a disconnect there. But this appeal to grievance, which was core to the Trump strategy. This was a candidate who did not become popular until he, or become viable in the Republican primary until he made the comments about Mexican Americans that he did. This is a core part of the strategy. It's something that I hope Democrats, Republicans, conservatives, liberals alike can reject as an ugly vestige of our past that has no place in our future.
Well, the president burst on the national scene by questioning his predecessor's birth certificate.
Yeah, so we have birtherism, we have the Central Park Five, we have allegations of racial discrimination in housing in New York City. Donald Trump has a long history of questionable issues about.
And a listener notes he has one African American in his cabinet.
Yeah, and look, we know that there are people of all backgrounds, colors, who agree with Donald Trump. So I think putting more black people in his cabinet is not necessarily, or any race of people, doesn't necessarily change the underlying policy, which is where our focus should be. And the politics and the rhetoric, which we know is toxic and destructive across a range of issues, not just race. So, yeah.
We got to go, but thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much,
Chris Tyson from LSU. Always good to talk
to be with you.